Hello, welcome to Poet Runner. This is our, I don't know, maybe our 50th episode. I have Richard Modiano on the other end. How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing good. I guess we're waiting for Phoebe, huh?
Yes, we are. And how was that award ceremony yesterday?
Well, it was good. It was the 42nd annual Labor Day Parade and Picnic at Banning Park in Wilmington. That is co-sponsored by all the major unions in Los Angeles, the ILWU, the Teamsters, SEIU, IATSE, and a couple of other ones. And it was very well attended, at least 2,000 people, maybe more.
So did you read anything out loud?
Yeah, I read two poems, two labor-oriented poems. I was the recipient of this year's Joe Hill Award for Labor Poetry, so I got to read two poems, and it was pretty good. It was slightly cooler there than it was in the rest of Los Angeles. Of course, it's closer to the ocean, but yeah, it was really worth
Hello?
Attending it. Hey, there you are.
Is this Richard?
Yes, it is.
Yep, and Raphael.
Hello.
Hey.
Howdy.
Yeah.
Well,
can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Well, we have Phoebe McAdams on. And Phoebe, what I wanted to talk about is the process of the poem. And we've talked to a lot of poets on this show about their books, about their individual poems, but we haven't really dove into the process of writing a poem from soup to nuts, so to speak. And I know that you've been writing poetry for a very long time, and you have 7 books, is that correct, or is it 8?
Yeah.
7 books?
I think it's 7.
Okay, 7 books, and one of them is a new and selected poems volume, which has a lot of your work in it. And over the years, well, first of all, what got you into poetry in the first place?
Well, you know, I wrote when I was young, when I was in elementary school and middle school. I wrote poems, but I didn't really think of myself as a writer. But I did write poems, and I kept a journal since I was 10, I think, or 11. I have them all. And so I've been writing, and journal writing has been very important to me because I love the format of day books. I'll tell you about that later. But so I started writing young, and then when I was in high school, I grew up in New York, and then we moved to Princeton, New Jersey, and Lewis McAdams was going to school in Princeton, and the headmaster of his high school in Dallas was the headmaster of my high school, and this is a funny story, in Princeton, New Jersey. His name was Hartman, and he decided when he met me, because he was the head of my school, and he knew Lewis and his family, Tom decided that Lewis and I were perfect for each other. So he actually set us up in the hallway of my high school. And that's how Lewis and I met. And he was right. And, you know, a couple of years later, we ended up getting married. And Lewis was a writer, and he was very connected to all of the poets on the Lower East Side of New York. All of the crazy poets, Ted Berrigan, Peter Sheldahl, who was a poet then, mostly, and Ann Waldman and all the guys at St. Mark's Church. So we spent a lot of time in New York hanging out with all of them. And I fell in love with the poets and their talk, their amazing talk. And that's what got me into poetry.
So all those people that you met there, I mean, just did you like say, I'm going to go home and I'm going to write something and show it to them? Or
no.
What
no,
happened?
No. I did not think of myself as a poet. I wrote some journals, but I wasn't doing any writing. I was mainly Mrs. Lewis for years.
Oh, of course, yeah. That's the way it was.
Yeah,
back.
You know, I mean, this was in the 60s and 70s, but I didn't think of myself as a writer. And you know, when Lewis and I split up, and I started writing in Bolinas, and then I moved to Boulder, Colorado, where my mom lived in Colorado Springs. So when Lewis and I split up, I moved to Colorado to be closer to my family while I figured things out. And that's when I started writing seriously. I had a good friend in Colorado Springs named Linda Bowie, and we edited a magazine called Attaboy together, which was, which you can still buy on Amazon. And we spent a lot of time in Boulder with the poets around Naropa Institute. And that's when I began to write seriously my own poems.
Okay. And by Attaboy, was that a reference to, I think there's an essay by William Carlos Williams where he's talking
that's
about
right. It's from that
American
poem,
speech.
Attaboy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Good. That's very good. You're the only person I've ever said that title to who picked up on that. That's where it came from.
So Williams then must have been some kind of template or paradigm or somebody that you could draw inspiration from or learn lessons from.
William Carlos Williams was a huge influence on me.
Okay.
I mean, for one thing, particularly when I moved to Los Angeles and started teaching at Roosevelt in that was in 1985. Well, and also I taught before that. I don't know if you know this about Williams, but, you know, he wrote poems in between patients.
I know about that,
his
prescription pad.
Yeah, and also he had a typewriter that was on some kind of cantilever that slipped under his desk. And when people left, he would pull this out and up and work on his poems. And I thought, you know, he had a full-time job and he wrote these amazing poems. I can write poems and have a full-time job because I needed to work and I loved teaching. And so that was an inspiration to me. And also the spare American talk was a huge inspiration to me and also an inspiration to all of the, you know, the guys on the Lower East Side who I loved. Ted Berrigan and Ed Sanders, and all of them for whom he was a huge influence. He was a huge influence. Frank O'Hara was a huge influence. Those guys.
I was going to ask you
and
about
Ted,
Frank O'Hara. If you saw yourself sort of relating to what he called his personalism, which was the poems that were the poems that came from his interactions, daily interactions with other people. They were not,
right.
He didn't write poetry as monuments to great events or commemorations of historical figures and things like that, because his argument with personalism was that the same significance, your ordinary daily life has the same significance emotionally as the life of whatever great man of the day might be. And that further, you didn't have to contrive special language to do that. All you had to do was sort of carve out the high points or the charged parts of daily speech, and that's how you made a poem.
That's right. And also, Lewis and I lived in Bolinas for years, and Joanne Kiger was a huge influence and a mentor to me, both as a person and then a writer. And so she also, her poems read differently than Frank O'Hara's, of course, but she also had this idea of the moment-to-moment following of your mind and, you know, on a daily basis. And Lewis used to say that she was of the kitchen window school of poetry, which was a compliment that she looked out her window and saw the universe. And so her poems are also about the daily and about her daily mind, which I don't think anybody captures the movement of mind better than Joanne Kiger. And that was also about her daily life, her interaction with people in Bolinas, what she saw on her property. I mean, they're extraordinary. All of her poems, when I was putting together my books and I was talking to Joanne about how do I organize this, she said, I date all my poems and I organize all my books chronologically so that in her books, what you have is a huge day book. I mean, you have her daily life one after another. And it's extraordinary. And it's also, it's different from Frank O'Hara's personism, but it is that acceptance and love and of the daily, of the ordinary.
Yeah, and that's the listeners, let's face it, most of us lead totally ordinary lives. We are not generals, presidents, kings. We're not discovering fusion energy or anything like that. I mean, those are special people. There's a handful of people. They deserve our curiosity, if not necessarily our respect in all cases, because some of these powerful people are evil, let's be honest. But the majority of people on the planet are ordinary people who lead ordinary lives, and they have their obligations to their job and to their siblings and to their parents, to their children, and that is what life is all about. And the kind of poetry that you write, to me, valorizes that life, that kind of life.
Yes.
That the majority of us lead.
The ordinary miracle.
Exactly. And that's what I really like about your poetry. And since we're talking about this, do you have some of your poems at hand that you can read to us? I'll let you pick them out.
Hold on. No, I don't. But let me go. Hold on. I have. Let me put the phone down for one sec.
Okay. So, you know, while we're waiting for Phoebe to come back, what I was, the reference to William Carlos Williams, listeners, is there, he sort of basically established an entire lineage of poets. They are not carbon copies of Williams. They went their own way. They developed from what he started. I mean, Allen Ginsberg's poetry, he credits Williams with setting him in the direction that he finally took. And, of course, Ginsberg's poetry is not at all like Williams. You would never mistake a Ginsberg poem for a Williams poem, except maybe his very earliest pieces where he was deliberately trying to imitate Williams. But he built on that inspiration and direction that Williams gave him. So are you there, Phoebe?
Yes. I was
going
to read, you know, because we were talking about the ordinary, I've been working on, you know, I keep journals, and I've been working on moments that I think are important, and sort of putting those together. That's what I'm working on now. But and a lot of my books have sections of daybooks in them. And I was looking. I was just looking before we talked about, I have a journal of the day that of Biden's inaugural speech. So how about if I read that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it's called What a Difference a Day Makes. Out there, doves, two lesser goldfinch, house finches galore, white-crowned sparrows down from Alaska, California towhee, hummingbirds swooping. Rain forecast, 2 p.m. 50%, 3 p.m. 30%, 6 p.m. 90%, now cloudy, cozy, though always on my aging mind, health, my blood pressure, Ron's protein count. Today, joy in birds, joy in conversations about poetry, joy in poems of William Carlos Williams, in two paintings by Sam Barai, And then mortality on the wall. There's an angel with a horn. Love you, Harry. Love you, Michael Lally, your continual devotion to poetry. Today, our new time. President Biden's 29 executive actions in one day. DACA stays. Pipeline goes. Wall, bye-bye. National monuments preserved. Air, water, safeguarded. Migrating birdies, protected. Paris Climate Accord, rejoined. NATO, back. WHO, back. I have been stunned by the daily blows to air, water, birds, endangered species, to DACA, to international agreements, people with liabilities, LGBTQ hit, trans hit, children living in cages, SNAP, hunger, destructions that I took personally, lost my faith in this world, in simple goodness, decency gone, love gone, hugs gone, happiness gone, dogs in the White House gone, music, art in the White House gone. But now, Joe with Joe Biden, back dogs, back joy, back hugs, back kisses, poetry back, Sean Haney, music back, an inauguration like no other, a day of colorful coats, so many steps to the podium, good knees, Gaga's big red skirt, gold peace pin, her magnificent voice, Biden's enormous Bible, his firm, restrained speech, Amanda Gorman, her hand gestures, her rhyme, her youth, J-Lo in white, Garth Brooks in iconic jeans and cowboy hat, Michelle's big red pantsuit and gold buckle, a day of joy that walks in heels, touching the wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier, the fabulous fireworks. I want to get up and see what will happen today. Write a poem. How will it be better today? Will I get my COVID appointment? Oh, look, Fauci is smiling, laughing. He looks so happy. Science is back. Truth is back. Breathe. That's my inauguration.
Well, that's a great inauguration poem, and it does have, it really resonates with the feelings of a lot, certainly it resonates with my feelings at that time. I mean,
yep,
it was like we were coming out of a nightmare.
That's right, and God willing, we won't be going back into it.
No, I don't think, I hope not. That's another subject, though, but,
yes,
but you know, the tremendous relief of so many people is in that poem, and the things that we endured and the things that we had that were sort of put to a stop with Biden's inauguration, the things that, I mean, it's like we have some relief, and that is all in that poem, and listeners, what. And you first time, I know we have some first time poets or some wannabe poets listening. This is a great poem because it shows exactly what you need to put into a poem to make it alive. And it's not a poem of abstractions about how nice it is to be back to normal after the nightmare. There are particulars that make that bring that emotion to us, a whole catalog of vivid particulars, both Phoebe's personal experiences on that particular day and the things that were happening in D.C. and the historical moment is all in that poem, and I think
that's something to aspire to
for poets.
Well, I'm really glad you said that, and I'll tell you who is a huge inspiration for me about that very thing is, have you ever read Ed Sanders' History of America in Verse?
Oh yes, yes, mm-hmm, yes.
I think those are such wonderful. I mean, this is one poem. He's got four books of that, which has been an inspiration to me for that very reason. And I'm glad you saw that in this poem that I read.
And is that printed anywhere, or is that still in that's still in your notebook?
No, that's still in my computer.
Okay. Well, we'll see it. We might see it. Its first appearance might be in the Broadside series that we're planning, based on poets that we've interviewed.
Oh, wonderful!
Here.
Oh, I would love that. I didn't know that was happening yet.
Well, we're working on it. We hope to have it realized by the end of October. So we're putting it together.
Okay,
now.
I will tweak this up for you.
Okay, great. But you know, and that's and listeners, these are the models to look for in poetry. You don't have to go. Of course, it's good to have a background in the whole lineage of American poetry, but you don't have to swallow it all at once. Take it in pieces. And go to those people that, I mean, if Phoebe is the poet that inspires you, when you read her poems, you will want to know how she got to where she is. And that is the best way to educate yourself about poetry. I mean, that's how I did it. I did not,
right.
I mean, I went to high school and you get some of the really important poets and you get some of the ones that were considered important at that particular time in high school English, for me, which was the 1960s. But when you connect with a poet, and in my case, I guess it was Allen Ginsberg. And as I read Ginsberg, I said, how did he arrive where he is today? And that led me to find out, because he was part of a lineage of poetry that went back to Williams, that went to the 19th century, including Walt Whitman and Emily Dickinson.
Yes.
And
I think
you
a
go
lot
back
of things
there.
Go back to Walt. Yep.
Yes, sure. So, you know, that is... And I mention this so that you are not intimidated for beginning writers. It seems formidable. If you read one of the masters, you say, I could never do that. Well, that's not where they started. They began somewhere. They began writing their own initial pieces and developed from there. So, you know, the usual advice to beginning poets is read other poets and continue to write. Well, that's pretty good advice. But
yep.
at the same time,
and also
don't
hang out with poets.
Yes, if
you
can do that, hang out with poets.
You
that helps.
You can go to be with poets. You can go to workshops and hang out with poets. I never took a poetry class in college. I majored in art history, and I never took a poetry class. I was where I learned how to write was in Holly Prado's poetry workshop, which I went to for 25 years. Where every week or every other week we would meet and we would bring our poetry and we would talk about our poetry, what works and what didn't work. And that, to me, that is where I learned how to put together poems.
And, that's most of the workshops are user-friendly, as they say these days.
Yep.
And,
and if you go to a workshop and it's not user-friendly, don't stay.
Yeah,
because
if they attack you like a school of sharks, move on. But the workshops that are good are the ones where they tell you what is good about your poem. Because whatever poem you write, there is something good in that. Maybe a single line is good in it, and maybe that's all. But that's something. That's
something
like,
to go on.
Yeah, exactly.
And Holly was very good at that. She always spoke to the positive and to the poet, to the poetry in your poem. She zeroed in on that. Because, I mean, most poets, I don't know about you, but I'm a very, you know, sensitive lady. And I, you know, if somebody criticizes a poem, I close up like a box. And then it takes me a while to open up again. I mean, so I think maybe some people are very confident in their poetry life, but I have to, you know, for to be in a workshop where I'm appreciated and where people see what's going on, that really inspires me to keep writing.
Yeah,
and that's
well,
what
I just,
you're looking for in a workshop.
I just read the Gregory Corso's latest book, The Golden Dot, and one of his poems ends with, after talking about this particular poet, and people had said, this is a quote, "Your poetry sucks," and Corso ends the poem with, "Nobody's poetry sucks."
Exactly. Exactly. There's something that's trying to get out, and you have to find that something and feed it.
And that's, you know, there is, of course, a craft involved in that, and a workshop is where you go to hone that craft. You're not going to a workshop to learn about your own emotions. You know about those because you're the one that's having
right.
them. Nobody else is having them. You are. You're the one that's having those emotions. You are the one that is having that feeling. And, of course, other people share these feelings, but whatever brings them on is different. The way you talk about them is different, and that is your own unique voice. And that's the thing that you want to do because that's what makes your poetry interesting, because we are hearing it in your voice, even though
right.
what you were talking about is universal. We all, I mean, there was a movie called The Lady from Shanghai, and one of the characters is talking about the vast cultural differences between the Chinese and everybody else. And the other character says, but tell me, do the Chinese laugh in Chinese? Do they cry in Chinese? No, they laugh like everybody else and they
right.
cry like everybody else.
That's right, that's right.
So those are the emotions that we all feel, but we all talk about them in different ways, and that is what really is, that's the interesting thing about poetry.
That's right. And then in the workshop, you can hear the language. You can hear the
yeah.
language, and you read them out loud. And then everybody can help you making the language zing, make the language move for you.
Can you lay another poem on us before we run out of time?
Hold on, let me get it.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to read the title poem from my selected, which is called The Large Economy of the Beautiful. And this poem, my husband Ron is a bird photographer. He takes amazing bird photographs. And so we've done a lot of birding. And so on the cover of The Large Economy of the Beautiful is one of my husband's photographs of dancing cranes. And so this is a title poem for that.
I didn't realize that Ron took that picture. I didn't know.
Yeah, his poems, his pictures are really something. I'll send you his website and you can look at them. But this is called The Large Economy of the Beautiful for Ron Ozuna. I am wearing my birding hat and crazy paraphernalia, binos and bottles, little notebooks and pens as cars whiz by on Highway 1. Today I have learned about Syrinx, nymph beloved by Pan, also the throat muscle and cartilage of bird song. The black skimmer moves along the top of the waves, trolling for fish. California cormorants stand on the sand, drying their wings. Willet, whimbrel, dowitcher, and plover, yellowfeet, redbills, great blue, snowy white. At night, the shapes of birds move differently. Wings calling us to rise from our daily difficulties and sing ourselves into form.
Beautiful, Phoebe. And that's
Thank
the
you.
Title poem from The Large Economy of the Beautiful, New and Selected Poems. That's the book I'm going to recommend. If you want to get into Phoebe's work, that's the book that you should start with. It's New and Selected Poems. It's a wonderful smorgasbord of a lot of her work. It's available from Cahuenga Press. We do encourage listeners to patronize small presses. And can they buy it directly from Cahuenga Press?
Yes, cahuengapress.com.
Okay, that's the place to go. If you... or else your local independent bookstore. But you know, your first choice should always be the publisher, especially if it's a small press publisher like Hawaiian Press.
Because
honestly, readers, the small presses are the ones that are printing the new poets, the cutting-edge poets, and the poets that are worth reading, in my view.
That's right. So, amen to that.
So anyway, I want to thank you for giving us your time today, Phoebe, and readers. We've been talking to Phoebe McAdams, and do check out her work. Do you have your own website, Phoebe, by any chance?
I don't.
Okay.
Kawanga Press has all the information
about
my
then
book.
Check out the Kawanga Press website. And Phoebe, thanks again for talking.
Thank you so much, Richard. This was wonderful. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
And now we go to the running part of the Poet Runner podcast. We have Jeremy Argelis. Did I say that right?
Hello, you sure did. Yeah, I'm here, man. Hey, Raphael.
Wow, I got it right? Cool. So
yeah,
I was looking
Jeremy,
at your resume. Oh, crap, I fucked it up. Gave it a shot. Can't always win. So, I was looking at your thing. You're also a personal trainer, and you do Ironmans too, right?
Yeah, no Ironmans. More short distance triathlon, duathlon, or half marathons. Half marathon. Yeah, no Ironmans yet. No half Ironmans yet at all. Just
I don't know, man. I can't swim. I'd probably die in the first part of it.
Yeah, I have no desire to do the super long races yet. I'm more into to speed, I guess you would say. Speed and
hey, no, you know what? Yeah. No, you know, if that works for you, that's great. I mean, I just pushed for did an ultra 31 miles, and that took me eight hours and 23 minutes. I liked about it, finding out that I could actually go for 8 hours and 23 minutes.
Yes. Yep. That is incredible. I did one marathon in Clearwater Beach, Florida, and it went okay, but I ended up walking the last probably, 6 miles, 5 miles. Just the muscles stopped working.
Yeah. No, I mean, everything's preference. I mean, I love 5Ks. I love half marathons, but I have this deep need to see how far I can go, so I'm probably going to keep pushing.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. I think that's a lot of people why they do it, to see what the human body can do, what they can do. One day I'll do it. I like to see how fast I can do 5Ks and test that way. But as we age, I guess we would go into longer distance races.
Well, yeah, so we don't have to be embarrassed about the speed that we're losing.
The speed, speed. Yeah, both are very hard on your body, so we just got to be very smart about it. Yeah.
Oh, no, because I do, my training's been 10 miles and 5 miles and 10 miles and 5 miles. And the 5 miles, I try to see how fast I can do 5 miles. And the fastest I've done so far is 37 minutes. And it's like, what I notice about it is when I'm doing those 5-mile runs, is like catching my breath is a pain in the ass.
Yes.
It's like, it ain't happening for a while.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're like, you know, you're kind of like... So I'm just waiting for the pass out and like wake up, my phone's gone, and everything's been robbed.
It's a max effort. Yeah, those ones, those 5Ks and 5-milers, it almost feels like a sprint because your heart rate for our age group is, it's above threshold, the 20, 30, 40 minutes. So it's uncomfortable.
What's your fastest 5K right now?
1650 a couple months ago.
Oh, man, I fucking hate you. I'm stuck at 21 minutes, and you're doing 16 minutes. Fuck, I hate you.
So, yeah, you would look into your speed work, your distance, the mileage you're doing, and, you never know.
No, because I run in the city, so I got to follow the stop signs and the lights and everything because, you know, I'm not gonna get myself, you know, killed trying to get my fast time and get hit by a car. It's like, no, I got to go this way.
Yeah. Totally. Cyclists do that still. They won't stop totally at stop signs, and they end up getting into accidents. But, yeah, being smart when we're out there.
No, I love I would love to have, a nice flat. I mean, tomorrow I'm probably going to go to Venice down in California and run down by the ocean. Then I don't have to like look for people because it's just a straight run.
Yeah, that's what I like. I like straight form and posture the whole time. And I'll do short stuff and then recover for a minute or two. Just 400s and short stuff and just 1 minute rest and then go back into it. Just really focusing on form and leg speed and stride length. Yeah.
So what are you training for right now?
Oh boy, let's see. Well, we have that free 5K we do every Saturday morning. Every Saturday at 7:30 a.m. here in Claremont, Florida, we have a free 5K park run. If you never looked it up, the website, parkrun.com, it's a free 5K that started over in England in the Europe area. They have hundreds of races over there, but we just have a few here in the United States. So we have that at 7:30. Usually 100 to 200 people show up, and that's a pretty competitive free race. I like testing myself out there. For the full 5K or for just the 1 mile, your 1 mile split. But that's pretty serious for me. But the cool morning, well, actually the Somer Sports Triathlon Series race number 4 is next weekend. So I'll probably end up signing up for that here this week. And that's a triathlon duathlon 5K. So I usually do the duathlon last time I did just the 5K because I was a little bit overtrained where I did a little too much the month before, but I was just exhausted. So I did just the 5K and I ended up winning that one. So it was good. Probably, but I like, yeah, duathlon. I'll get back into triathlon here one of these races. But I like testing the running and cycling's a blast. Cycling's great fun. But yeah, I like the running the most.
So how do you train? What do you do for nutrition? I mean, my nutrition sucks.
Yeah.
But I still manage to run all the time.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you still look great. You look good. But, yes, what's the fuel that you're using, the race fuel? I am very strict diet since I do take it pretty seriously. It comes down to just when you go into fruits and vegetables, you've always heard. But the main carbohydrate, I guess you could say, would be oatmeal. Oatmeal works really good. And then all the fruits. Any fruit you want, but mostly bananas are just always available. I mean, and so easy to consume. So any oatmeal and fruits, and then rice and beans works perfect most of the time. And some cereals. I'm just careful with the cereals because some cereals taste too good and I'll gain weight off it, or sometimes I won't do dairy. So, yeah.
I don't have the weight problem. Nope, don't have the weight problem. I'm stuck at like 145 to 135.
Okay, yeah. So, but yeah, that works. But I always have like Cliff Bars with me. We have Publix supermarkets here in the Southeast region where there's organic type bars that are just fruit based, like banana or banana chocolate chip or berry. I'll do stuff like that.
No, and the thing I got from the Ultra was it had a lot of watermelons and a lot of oranges during the runs, and I've actually learned to love oranges and watermelons.
Yes, I love it too. Any of those fruits are so awesome.
No, they're great for running. You know, when you're doing a long run, the oranges and the watermelon are probably the best things you can put in your system as you run.
Yeah, those vitamins that are in there, and they're easy. Most of them are pretty easy to consume, to break down, and they're a great carbohydrate.
Yep.
And oranges, yeah, I always use those little Halo Mandarin oranges. They're always with me. They're always in my oatmeal. They're a quick, easy snack. They're only about 50 calories, but it works. Yeah, you don't ever want to run out of fuel, especially on a long run. Yeah.
Nope. No, I mean, I've become really careful because I want to keep doing this and keep seeing how far I can get. But so I've learned to be careful. I've got gels now and I'm hydrating more because I used to actually run. I ran 4 marathons without hydrating throughout the whole thing.
Oh, wow. And it worked out okay, huh?
Well, you know, as soon as you're done, I mean, as soon as I was done, I'd be on the floor and my buddy who got me there, she'd go, "Do I need to do anything? Well, one, let me lay on the ground here and just bring me a shitload of water."
Yeah, they'll just seize up. The muscles just seize. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they need
oh,
that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, seizing up muscles. Wow. When I did the 31 mile run on the 19th mile on the second loop, my knees just gave out and I couldn't do shit for 10 minutes.
Oh man.
That was an interesting pain.
Yeah.
That was different.
Yeah, I experienced it too. You want to do something about it, but you can't. Your muscles just quit because they don't have what they need. Yeah, it's great. Or they've never been exposed to something like that before. Yeah.
Yep. You learn to let it go, and then eventually I was able to keep going. But the thing is, the medics there wanted me to stop, you know, get on their car and then, like, be taken down. I'm like, nope.
Because
I need to finish. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What do you enjoy more, the 5Ks or the half marathons?
Ooh, boy. 5Ks are over pretty quick. Half marathons, ooh, boy. I guess there's a – it's a different competition. Wow. I would say I enjoy the 5Ks more, but it is over quicker, a lot quicker.
Yep.
The pacing is different, but the effort on the half marathon, to me, is the same as the effort on the 5K. You're just, at your half marathon pace for that hour and 18 minutes, hour and 20 minutes. So it's, and the fueling. Now all of a sudden you got to fuel properly. Maybe have some honey with you, or you might have to even stop and use the bathroom. You know, and that's an issue.
That's why I'm really careful about gels and what I put in my stomach because I don't want to stop.
The honey works for me. The honey works for me, but if I got to stop, I'd rather be comfortable instead of worrying about that. And so I could just focus on my breathing and my running form.
So do you prefer trails or streets?
Oh, boy. Both are really good. We have a really good one here at Lake Hiawatha Preserve where it's, we use it as for our park run course, our cross-country course, when there's another race going on. It's a 1.5-mile loop, and we just do it two times, and then we have the 200-meter sprint kind of going on. And both are really good. I love nature and the woods and a good trail. The only issue I have with it is some of the turns and some of the debris that's on the trail. So the risk of injury kind of goes up, and I'm just so careful with not injuring myself. So
I know what I like about the trails is the view. It's like the one I just did, the Malibu State Creek one, was a great view. I mean, as much pain that you're in doing it, you see this great view and you feel like, okay, it's kind of worth it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Where my main trail that we run on here and in Claremont has the lake right to the left of it or right of it. So the whole time you get a lake view and the boats and the sunrise and all the other people out there. So that's real motivating too. That's real enjoyable. But sometimes that's direct sunlight too, where it gets hot quick. But the trail is very nice. You can feel the moisture, the air, and the cooler temperature. So I do like that. So, yeah. Both are fine for me. Both have its purpose, and
So when you run, do you find it? Does it help you? Like, is it like therapy? Is it meditative, or is it Zen, or is it just the run?
It'll be both. I mean, the running, as you know, you might have heard the runner's high or the endorphins that we get, adrenaline maybe. If I don't run, we don't get that dopamine that we're looking for, and that's kind of how I get it. By doing the higher intensity stuff, the higher heart rate. As that heart rate goes higher, more is released, and the better I feel. So that's a big part of it too. But being competitive in my age group and pushing my body to the limit as I age too, I like doing that. I like competing and winning races, and and it's fun. It's a good team stuff sometimes. Good individual sport. Just to see what the potential is. Yeah, so.
I'm old. I'm just happy to finish these days.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's a blessing to be, to do what we do. Yeah, just to get out there and enjoy that, the quality of life, too. The human body is amazing, what it can do when you give it the right stimuli. You know, just fuel it up, recover hydration, get enough sleep. Wow, it's amazing, yeah.
No, it's fun at work when you see younger people, like, you know, getting all tired and like, what are you bitching about? I ran 10 miles this morning.
That's the big deal. Like, Yeah. What do I usually say? I say when we're walking around a group, I'm like, you're the youngest one here. Why are you complaining? And it is a bunch of 30, 40-year-olds around like a 16-year-old.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm 56 and like, younger kids that are working where I work are all tired. I'm like, what the hell? What did you do? Well, I drank all night. So, Jesus Christ, when I was your age, I had 3 jobs and I drank too.
Yeah, I did. I worked a major grocery store and still performed really good. I think the work ethic has changed a lot as internet technology or social media has come in. There's a lot more sitters now where me and you, we probably just worked hard, you know, and we went out and played all the time on our bikes or climbing trees or capture the flag or hide and seek.
I think the people being you associated with, like runners, are more, more disciplined and more, apt to be more energetic and have more projects than the person who doesn't, exercise. And I actually talked to my kid today who's having anxiety. I go, maybe you should start running maybe 10 minutes a day. And he goes, what do you mean, Dad? I go, well, running helps depression and anxiety. So maybe if you run 10 minutes before school, that'll help you, relax.
Absolutely, running or cycling, or if somebody had an elliptical or treadmill, absolutely. Then sometimes we just need that dopamine, just that little bit of dopamine or serotonin. And sometimes they do have an issue inside their brain or the human body where they're low on that stuff. Running will fix that up a lot of times. Yeah, it's the cure for a lot of things, a lot of depression.
I think it'll build his confidence and stuff, and I think, if he starts running more and starts feeling, healthier, it'll help. But, unfortunately, in Nebraska, I'm in California, but, all I can do is, tell him what I think can help, and I think running would help him.
I have to do that. I got to motivate myself in the morning. Sometimes, I don't feel like getting up, but I know I'm going to feel better after I get up and get out. I know I'm going to feel better.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm a notorious staller. It's a point where I'm at the gym. I lift weights before I run. I hate sit-ups, but sometimes I'll do more sit-ups so I don't have to start the run. Which kind of makes no sense because I really hate sit-ups. So I'm, doing more sit-ups, making new playlists because I don't want to start. But once I start, I'm happy. And it's kind of like, so why did I stall? And I never quite understand why I stall.
That's it. Yeah, just start, and you know that it'll work out. Just getting to the trail or getting to those woods where you do your running, it's just you're happy you did it. And then you run into people that you probably know, other runners or other people that you met along the way. So we're all there to try to encourage and inspire each other to keep going and don't quit. Yeah.
The funny thing is, it's like when you do a run that was technically hard and you remember it being hard, but you remember doing it feeling easy, but still, when you're doing it, like you haven't done it for a while, you still feel it's going to be hard. But once you start doing it and getting there, you're good. But the thing is, you just have to get there.
Yeah. You just, you got to get there. Do the work, put in the work, and usually it pays off. And you'll be happy you did it, usually. And it's not easy, and it makes us stronger in other parts of life when we do this hard exercise, whether it's strength training or cardio. I mean, other life tasks become easier because you've done the hard stuff. You ran a 31 mile or stuff like that. So all these simple house tasks are not too bad compared to that stuff.
Yeah. You're also a personal trainer. How's that go for you?
Yeah, I did that. I did that at the National Training Center here in Claremont, Florida. It's just a regular gym open up to the general public, but it does. It's a nicer facility that has Olympic pool. It has a track. It has soccer fields. Personal training is very rewarding. It was a lot of fun to be to have all those clients come in and having the athletes there, too, from other countries and the pro athletes in the area. But personal training is great fun. Had a lot of clients, a lot of people making huge improvements, body composition or strength or cardio, and that's really rewarding to be speaking to somebody's life and encourage them and to see results, see positive results. So I like that part. Now I got more into go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, now I got out of that and went into cardiac rehab. So it's almost more rewarding. It's totally different in a way, but after people have a cardiac event, whether it's a heart attack or they need stent, or they need bypasses. After they do that, about a month or two after they have that major surgery, they come to us in cardiac rehab, and we just do basic cardio with them. Just start off easy for some of them and just progress the same you would a personal training client, just progress a little more safely. But I still personal train usually 2-3 times a week with somebody, or run coaching if somebody wants that.
So how is that? I mean, how do you help someone get their cardio and get back into being cardio with that? I mean, that sounds kind of intense.
Yeah, so just starting off easy. Yeah, they have, most of the people do have, they've had their chest opened up, you know, and access to the heart. And the heart is a muscle, and it is really resilient if you give it what it needs, just in the right progression. The big part of our program at work is that we try to do the exercise part and the nutrition part and the mental health counseling, or the stress and emotional health counseling. So it's a 3-part program for most of these patients. But the exercises are usually treadmills or ellipticals or recumbent bikes or more new steps, side fit, new steps or hand bikes. And yeah, they're all really successful and enjoy it a lot, because most of these people that have had these cardiac events weren't on an exercise program before, and they kind of just ate what they wanted and just lived life until something started to get clogged up.
That's a lot, you know. I mean, making sure someone's healthy. The gym I go to, all the trainers are shit. You know, I mean, I've seen one woman come in, and she's always been the same size for the last 3 years, and she's had different trainers, and none have helped her with her, you know, with her goals. And I feel bad for her.
Yeah, we give people the tools, but the hardest part, I don't know if the hardest part is doing the work. I think exercise for me and you and a lot of other people, exercise is the fun part, is the easiest part. The nutrition is what gets a lot of people, or the type of job that they have. Nutrition and that job, if they do have a sit-down job, that probably would make it pretty hard. I don't have a sit-down job. I never have, so when I don't want to. Because that probably happened to me too. It's just, nutrition, discipline with nutrition, and sticking to it. Maybe some cheat days, maybe, but a lot of times it's not necessary. You can cheat with the fruits. Like you love the fruits. I love the fruits. Potatoes taste great. So just being disciplined in our training program, hitting our goals in the training program, and hitting our goals with nutrition too. And there's a lot of bad information out there. Yeah, so.
Well, no, I mean,
properly.
I've read all the information. Training, you know, I mean, I tend to listen to my body. I mean, I've got a workout that nobody quite gets, because I do it my way, but I get results and I look fine and it works for me.
Yeah.
But I go to the gym, I get in, I get out. I don't sit there like I want to spend all my time there, and a lot of people do. Because I want to finish this gym and then do my run and then, you know, relax before work and then, you know, do it again the next day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, supersetting is a way to where there's non-stop, non-rest. But the gym sometimes is therapy for people. They go there just to get out. We don't know what environment that they're in at home. But to come with other people or see their trainer or other gym members. But they haven't been exposed to supersetting or compound sets before, or short rest periods. They don't understand those sciences. That's why hiring a personal trainer sometimes is very beneficial.
Because I don't take that much rest between sets, and I'm looking at these people playing on their cell phones, and it's like, he's going to be there for a while.
We call them the sitters. If you have just one leg extension or one leg press machine, you see somebody, I would see, let people work in with you, but 1 to 2 minute rest, depending on how much weight you're lifting, how many reps you're doing. I get it. As long as the people are getting benefits.
No, I just want to make sure I'm trying to build up my stomach for the running and keep my body kind of strong for the running, and, you know, just so I don't feel fatigued when I run.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. What do you use treadmills? Do you use treadmills at the gym too?
Nope. I mean, the only thing I'll ever use at the gym that has anything to do with my legs is the stair climb.
Okay, yeah. That is very effective. Some ellipticals and the stair climb are very effective. Just to get glutes and hamstrings really strong.
I like getting it to level 20 and just going for 15 to 20 minutes, and then that's after a run. So I'm like going, I'm pretty much already dead. So I'm just, this is extra.
Yes.
But, it's amazing what you find out how much you can do. I mean, I'm pretty sure you know about that. When you push your limits and you're like, I mean, Jesus Christ, 16 minutes for like a 5K is fucking great. And I'm still pissed off about that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of hard work. It was plateauing at some point, but I had some major breakthroughs. When I was with the Adidas track team, I learned a lot about speed, about just speed work and how speed works. And then the strength training that they do is mostly all Olympic lifting or deadlifts and heavy squats and understanding
that force production.
So it works. It transfers to the ground. If you can get that force to the ground properly, it works big time. So then that's why speed days, two or three, and then your longer, slower runs are so important.
No, I've noticed, I mean, I was afraid to do squats and leg presses, but I noticed my legs have gotten stronger since I've been doing that.
Oh, yeah.
But I was
fine. Yeah, you got it.
No, I was afraid of my legs being way down. But the one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to do squats or leg presses like too close to a marathon or an ultra. That's a mistake.
Yes. Even if you're going to test your run time, like I like testing a 1 mile or testing a 5K every week almost. I try to test it. Sometimes that's not easy to do because overtraining will happen. But you want to do the strength training, then test the distance and see if you've gotten improvements. So tapering away from strength training or hard running the day before a race or the week before a race, actually. So, yeah. So our legs are totally healed up and then seen.
Yep, and they're rested and you're ready to go.
Oh, yeah, you feel good. You feel light. You feel strong. Yeah, it's been a problem with me a lot. I do train hard. I think last month I probably overtrained. I kind of peaked using my Garmin Connect. I'll say that I was peaking, and I did. I did almost get a PR in my 5K last month too. But, just overtraining syndrome started to hit me to where I was just exhausted all the time, no matter how much I ate or sleeping was an issue and just resting heart rate was higher. So I backed off. Yeah. Backed up. The speed work is very, very hard to do. A lot of high intensity intervals. So
no, but I've been doing speed work every other day, and I know what you mean. Because I mean, when I do the speed work days, I'm actually more tired than the distance running.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's all about effort. It's
more
out of you. So much stress. It does. I thought I could do it, but it definitely catches up to us. That's why we got to know our bodies so well, and then really looking at our heart rate and our paces. And if it's slower paces than normal, our heart rate's higher than normal, it's probably time to slow down or take an additional day or two off.
Well, no, I mean, and you also got to know when you can go along. I did 15 miles for 3 weeks straight. And then someone told me to slow down. And I did, because that person, I'll listen to somebody who's qualified. But say a lay person probably not calling me crazy, I go, well, you don't even run, so leave me alone.
Yeah, so put yourself in that person's shoes. Like, I did write somebody a marathon training program last month, and I don't do a lot of marathons, but the one that I did in the half marathons, you have to put on a lot of mileage in the body. If you're over 40 years old, you have to that 15-mile run. You're going to be pretty sore, and you'll be down for a couple of days. So we got to be really careful with the amount of mileage, the volume that we're doing, and the paces that we're doing.
Well, I know I've learned one thing about my running is when I'm doing distance, just to enjoy it and don't go for PRs and don't hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are always trying to reach their PRs, and I'm like, I'm 56. I'm not trying to reach a PR. I'm just trying to finish and enjoy it. I'm at that point where, my little kid's impressed that I run. Great. He's just kind of happy that I do this stuff. But,
that's right. He's good.
I don't think I'm gonna get a 3-hour marathon in this lifetime. You know, I mean, the fastest I've done a marathon is 3 hours and 41 minutes.
Yeah, which is,
you know, I'm happy with that.
Under 4 hours. And
yeah.
If you ever did want to, just if you wanted to test your 5K in 1 mile, you know, you could. It's kind of a good number to say that you can do. And
yeah,
I like it. It does give you bragging rights too.
No, bragging rights are great. I mean, as soon as I did the 31-mile run, I was all over myself going, you know, not that many. Most people would have quit by now, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
probably right. I mean,
yeah.
No, because once you realize that you've gone that long, and the funny thing was when it finished, my legs weren't beat up. They weren't tired. I wasn't tired. I was okay.
Nice.
And I thought it would be the opposite. But the thing, the body – you don't always know your body completely, and then when you learn more about it, it feels great to find out that you can, you know, endure that much punishment.
Yeah, for sure. Through training, you learn a lot about yourself. Through the failures, you learn what not to do, what to do, about eating before a long distance run, and what to eat, you know, all that stuff.
Yep.
What works and what doesn't, and asking other people too what they do, and putting it all together and trying it out and seeing what happens. A lot of it's trial and error, what we do, and see what works.
No, a friend of mine suggested ginger shots with cayenne pepper early in the morning with lemon juice, and that's been working. And then apple cider vinegar, you know, shots after the run, and it works and it feels good.
I've heard this stuff. Yeah, we had a really intelligent trainer that I worked with. I disagreed with him a lot of things, but I've heard that he said that stuff, and I'm kind of old school. I'm like, you're crazy, man. I'm not doing none of that stuff, but it does work for some people. For others, it doesn't, or it's not necessary.
No, it works for me. It kind of, you know, it feels like that added boost in the morning that, you know, it's just a shot. You sprinkle a little, like, salt and a little, like, you know, cayenne pepper, and then you down it.
Wow.
And
I can totally see that. What are these young kids? They're doing, like, a C4 pre-workout with all the B12 and taurines and guarines and caffeine, and that fires them up pretty good. But,
you know what's really funny? I've done Insane Lab Psychotic, and it's like everybody goes, that shit makes you jittery. I go, it really doesn't do shit to me. He goes, what do you mean? Ah, dude, I used to do crystal meth. This ain't shit.
Yeah,
so, you know, it doesn't really. It doesn't.
Coffee.
My body doesn't really respond. I mean, the pre workout helps in the workout, but I don't get that whole, like, you know, thumping crazy, you know, chest thing from these pre workouts because. I used to do stupid stuff that made my tolerance super high.
Yeah. Well, man,
doesn't hit me as hard.
Awesome that you were. Yeah, well, it's awesome. Yeah, you're still blessed to be alive and performing well and healthy. You look great, and you got a family. Yeah, so yeah, some of that stuff can really cause palpitations and arrhythmias even and stuff. So. Yeah,
I know, but it doesn't hurt me. I mean, I know people who overdo it, and it really fucks them up, and it's like, what's wrong? I feel like I'm going to pass out. I go, well, how much pre-workout did you drink? Probably more than I should have. I go, well, dude, take the damn recommended dosage. Don't put more than you need to.
That's right. It's there for a reason. Yeah,
you know, there's directions. That's why they tell you don't drink 5 Red Bulls, because it's going to kill you.
Yep.
It's slow for not normal. Pre-workouts are not normal. It's an overabundance of caffeine being entered into your system, and you got to be careful.
Yeah, you sure do, especially during endurance events when the heart rate's already going to do your 160, 70, 80.
I do half a pre-workout when I do, like, long runs because I don't want it to, you know, mess up my system or make me, you know, suddenly have to use the bathroom. I'm more worried about my time and my running and enjoying the run because I think, you know, the funny thing is I enjoy marathons because I enjoy, you know, just the distance and, you know, and I don't know what it makes you feel. You know.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and
I think everybody has their own experience. I think when you run, you have your own experience when you do your 5Ks and your half marathons and your do diathlons.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's what you get from it that's important, you know. And you know what? You're not competing with anybody else but yourself, actually.
Yeah, I really just try to beat my last time. Of course, I'll watch if there's somebody my age group front of me or behind, but I just try to get a better time than last. There's always going to be somebody faster than us out there, and just beating myself each time. I like doing that. Yeah.
No, it's like when I was doing the ultra and people were passing me, I'm like, I can't worry about people passing me. I just need to finish.
Yeah, running their race. Yeah, if you start running their race, yeah, that's when stuff starts to go wrong. Yeah.
No, people get lost, you know, chasing everybody else, and they should be worried about just, you know.
Yeah. Stick to your face.
Yeah. And just running our race. Either, you know. No, because, I mean, the most enjoyable thing you can do is just run. I mean, the funniest thing, this will make you laugh. I did the LA Marathon last year, and it was right about Oscar time, and people were stopping to take pictures of the made-up Oscar signs, and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, why are you stopping?
Yep. It happens at Disney Marathons that we have people stop and go. I mean, that's just what they want. They're just doing it to do it. Even with some of the Ironman races, people just do it to do it. And But now you get kicked off the course for some of these things, so... stopping and taking pictures. Yeah. It is a big event to some people.
I just want to keep going, and I just, I want to enjoy the race. I mean, that's all it is to me, is just, enjoyment, feeling good and, just trying to be healthy and feel,
Yeah, for sure.
Look in the mirror and like, hey, I mean, the funny thing is, I don't think I'm that built, but everybody tells me I am. So I'm good. I'd rather have someone tell me than brag about it. Huh?
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Even physically fit people. Always the body dysphoria. Yeah. Where you look at yourself and you're like, dang, still my abs don't look good, or my hips. I still got this love handle here. And we could be the best looking people. We got the physique, but still our minds get us. So just know that's a lie.
Perfect. Well, no, it's sort of like the supermodel who thinks she's too fat, and everybody's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, that's what it takes, some good friends
but I am
to come
fat.
Along. Yeah, somebody
and
to
you know,
you
and if a supermodel says that in front of a truly fat girl, the fat girl's going to want to slap the shit out of the supermodel.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
What the fuck are you talking about?
We all got our struggles, yeah, where we don't think we're good enough or smart enough or look good enough or fast enough,
But, sometimes you just got to be happy with what you got. I mean, I'm happy as 56. I'm able to, run this distance and all that. I know a lot of people my age don't look as healthy as I am, and I know, and I should be happy. I should be proud that I can, keep doing what I do.
Yeah, and it's inspiring somebody. Somebody's watching you, watching us, watching others, and it's inspiring them. Or they're looking at your name on results and saying, hey, there's another age grouper. I got to beat this 56-year-old guy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
But we're about out of time. But when's your next run? When's the next one you're doing? When's your next major race?
Next week. We'll do it next week, Saturday. Next week, Saturday, I'll either do the free 5K or the duathlon or triathlon. I'm not sure yet. Yeah,
and
we'll
what races you got coming up in the next year?
Don't really sign up for stuff. I do need to get another half marathon. So if I did that, it'll probably be like a OUC half marathon, that's downtown Orlando half marathon, or Mount Dora half marathon, stuff like that.
So are you trying to do a half marathon and a 5K each month? Because next year I'm going to try to do at least one marathon or one ultra, like once a month.
Yes, if they had them around here. We don't have, they're not that popular, the marathons. We'd have to drive a little bit of distance, 2 hours, but yeah, I haven't really put the, I'm not really concerned with the marathons yet. I've been doing the duathlon. I need to get back into triathlon. Since I'm a USAT level 1 certified coach, but I haven't been using it any yet. But I need to start using it because triathlon's so huge here in Claremont, Florida. And I was pretty good at it, so I'm going to get back into that. So I swam today,
Definitely want to have you in the show maybe 6 months to a year from now, just to see where you're at.
We'll do it. Yeah, it'll be an honor and privilege
I like telling every runner that, it's just like a poet. A poet's going to have a new book, so they're going to have more to talk about. I think a runner's going to have another race, and they're going to be at a different level from 6 months to a year from now. So,
for sure.
Either you know, it's either going to tell us about how well they're doing or, like, telling them about setbacks. You know, it could be either way. I mean, but still, you know, talking it out and finding out where they're at be great, you know, and that's what I want to keep doing with the show.
Yep, for sure. The last big failure was the overtraining syndrome, and last year was plantar fasciitis, but I've learned from all of them, or a few years ago, lower back pain, and be able to help other people learn about that.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. I could tell you about that. During the ultras, they dump ice water on top of you, and my back was almost seized because I have lower back pain.
Yeah,
I felt that right away.
Can hold us up. Yeah. Yeah, that lower back just holds our torso in the upright position along with our core, front side of the core.
Yep.
So it fatigues, yeah.
Well, everything you got to worry about. But again, thanks for being on the show, and this has been
thanks for having me.
I don't want to mispronounce the last name.
Arguelles from Cuba.
Arguelles, Jeremy Arguelles. And it's been great having
Arguelles,
him. Hopefully,
you got it.
And 6 months from now, we can have him again. This has been the Poet Runner podcast. Thank you for listening.
You got it, man. Take care, man.